You're listening to Engage on Central Florida Public Media. I'm Sharon Stone. The chain of events that killed dozens of sloths brought to Central Florida as part of a proposed Sloth World attraction is sparking outrage. The animals were imported from South America and transferred to a warehouse on I-Drive in the heart of Orlando's tourist district. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Commission launched an investigation into Sloth World, and records showed that facility intended to house multiple shipments of sloths lacked consistent power, water, and reliable heat. 13 sloths survived. They were brought to the Central Florida Zoo in need of around-the-clock care. Unfortunately, one of them, named Bandit, had to be euthanized after becoming unresponsive yesterday. That was despite continuous care from vets, including fluid therapy, assisted feedings, blood monitoring, vitamin and glucose supplementations.
When Bandit came in, he was the most critical of the 13, and for the last 6 days, the team has done everything they could to give him every last chance. But, you know, he's remained weak throughout, and he's had a few times where he's rallied and seemed to have a little more energy, but he never reached a point where he could climb upward, and he just didn't have any energy. He'd start to eat, take a bite or two, and go right back to sleep. He'd fought as long as he could fight, and he just didn't have anything left. So once we knew that he'd reached a point that there was no way he was going to be able to recover, we didn't want to prolong things.
That was Richard Glover, CEO of the Central Florida Zoo. He says the other 12 are stable. He's cautiously optimistic, but wants people to understand the sloths all have serious issues, and none of them were healthy when they arrived on Friday, April 24th. Glover says they picked up the sloths and brought them back to the zoo after the owner of Sloth World called and asked if they would be interested in taking the animals.
From my standpoint, I'm looking at my team and going, we've taken on something really big. This is going to be a lot for the team. And that's part of the reason we took a little bit of time to decide, you know, can we do this and make sure that we had everything we needed to do it and we could physically handle having them here and also could handle it in terms of staffing and operations. So the first thought I had is, okay, clearly we've got a place for them. They're all here. They all made it here. Now the work really begins.
Logistically, practically, what does it cost to care for these animals?
So we're still trying to kind of figure that out. Everything's moving very fast. But our best estimate right now is we're spending somewhere between $1,500 and $2,000 a day, assuming that day there's no surprises. There's no special care that's needed. There's no tests beyond kind of typical blood tests, those kinds of things. We don't discover one of them has something that needs some really expensive medicine. That's kind of the bare minimum per day. So 30 days in quarantine, you're talking about a bare minimum of somewhere between $45,000 and $60,000. And most of them will probably be in quarantine considerably longer than the 30 days. So we fully expect that when it's all over, we'll be well past $100,000 in expenses.
What about the emotional side? What kind of strain does this put on your staff?
It's a lot. I talked to the team. I talked to our curator before we decided to bring them on about that. You know, is the team ready for this? Are they ready to handle the fact that the chances are, you know, all 13 of them probably won't survive. And there's a possibility none of them might survive. We really don't know at this point. We don't know exactly what condition they're going to be coming in. And so going into this, the team knew that was the circumstances we had and the challenge we had. And everyone was in unison that it's what we needed to do and it's what these animals needed. So yeah, it's a big emotional burden on the staff. There's a lot of pressure. I will say there was a lot of pressure on the team because we made it 5 days without losing any. And then you start to feel this pressure of everyone expects that we're never going to lose any, which from the get-go wasn't really realistic. We were just hopeful. We did everything we could, but it does take an emotional toll. Losing one certainly takes an emotional toll. And the fact that there's 12 more that need our help constantly means there's no time to grieve that one you lose right now. So it's a really interesting dynamic for a team because everyone's so excited to rally and so determined to save as many of them as possible that I think everyone just kind of works through their emotions the best they can. We have resources available for the team if they need to talk to somebody. And we encourage them to do that. And certainly we're doing everything we can to check on the team that's working on the sloths and see what they need, make sure they have whatever they need. But it's hard. And these are animal care professionals that are used to loss and used to animals that have a hard time and need extra help. And, you know, that's just part of everyday life when you're at a zoo. And so, you know, even with that said, it's a hard situation because, I mean, we look at Bandit, he was just barely over a year old. That's an animal that should have had a life decades longer. And it's really heartbreaking to watch animals like that struggle and lose them. And you feel a deep personal sense of responsibility for every one of them.
Richard, people want to help. They want these animals to make it. I know you're feeling that pressure, but what can someone listening to us do to support the recovery?
I highly encourage everybody, please, please, please do not ever buy a pet off the illegal pet trade, because the reason that things like this happen is that people are willing to spend money on animals that they think they should have and then they shouldn't. But, you know, as far as these 12 that we have left, certainly if anyone wants to donate towards their care, we are taking donations if they want to go to our website at centralfloridazoo.org. The other thing is on our social media and email, we are getting so many messages from people around the globe encouraging us and checking on these animals and talking about how much they care about these animals. And that means so much. I mean, it just, if you don't have the ability to give any money, just the encouraging words sometimes are so helpful. I mean, a day like today, where we lose one of these animals and everyone's struggling, to see the outpouring of support and how much people care about what we're doing, it means a lot to the team, I think a lot more than people would realize.
Is there a way the average person can tell if they're supporting legit conservation efforts instead of something that's based only on entertainment?
It is difficult because I don't want to make a blanket statement saying that only certain types of places are, but I will tell you, we're Association of Zoos and Aquariums accredited. And what that means is out of over 3,000 places that are licensed to hold animals in the country, there's only about 250 institutions that are AZA accredited. If you see the AZA's name and accredited on any organization or their website, you know that they're held to the highest standards of animal care and animal well-being, because they have to be. People come in and do several days of inspections periodically. It is not easy to get that accreditation or keep it. So that's pretty much a guarantee. And that's the first thing I would say. But I don't want to say that any place that doesn't have that may not be doing great work, may not be completely capable and experienced and doing everything right by the animals. But I can't guarantee that anywhere else. So if I'm the public and I want to be sure without a shadow of a doubt that I'm going somewhere that the animals are handled the right way, treated the right way, then I would look for the AZA name.
Richard Glover is the CEO of the Central Florida Zoo. State investigators looking into Sloth World report that of the dozens of the animals, many died from cold stress, while others arrived in poor health and did not survive. The investigation also found that additional sloths continued to die even after the state started looking into the operation. Bobby Fokitis is an animal physiologist and biology professor at Rollins College. He explains why sloths are especially vulnerable to transport stress and the animal welfare concerns that come with it.
I think as a society, we're at a bit of a crossroads where we're starting to think about the way we engage with animals. We're seeing sort of two things arise. We're seeing well-meaning people that want to help with conservation, that are thinking about sustainability, that are thinking about the animals in the wild. And these are the same people that are outraged by something like this. And then we have, unfortunately, a growing demand for these sort of exotic animals, whether it's a sloth, whether it's monkeys, exotic birds, exotic reptiles. And this is an area where we're seeing a lot more animals being imported in, often legally sourced again. We're seeing a lot more international trafficking of animals that are rare.
Based on what's being reported about the sloths involved in Orlando's Sloth World, what stands out to you from an animal welfare perspective?
Usually when animals are imported in from another country and they're wild-caught animals, a lot of care usually goes into making sure that the environment that's necessary to keep them alive and well is already in place. And I think here we had a failure of that where animals were brought in, perhaps in a hurried situation. with the end result being they weren't prepared. And more importantly, there was a lack of oversight or management that would allow them to make sure that the animals were prepared to be taken care of, which in the case of sloths can be quite substantial.
What is it about sloths that makes them so susceptible to transport and changing environments?
If I had to pick one word to describe sloths, it'd be the word that everybody would use to describe sloths, which is slow. They're very slow. They move slow, they breathe slow, and their metabolism is very low. And that's been an evolutionary advantage for them because they've been able to take to the trees and essentially live out a life where everything just ramps down. So low metabolic rates, they feed on leaves, they can take, 50 or so calories a day is enough to sustain them. Whenever they do get stressed out, they don't really go overboard. They don't really show a lot of the classic signs of an animal that is stressed out. So that stress will occur in silence, and if no one's paying attention, it'll be missed. So sloths are really not built for interaction. They're really built for being stable in an environment that's got a limited range of temperatures and things like that. I've always thought of sloths as being almost reptile-like, even though they're a mammal, because of their low metabolic rate and because of the fact that everything around them is geared towards a very limited ability to regulate their temperature, which is a defining trait of mammals. So when they're exposed to cold, they're going to experience that a lot worse than when we're exposed to cold, because our core body temperature can be regulated a lot better, whereas they can't be.
So it sounds like just the average person might not be able to tell that something's going wrong. But are there warning signs that can be picked up on that something's going wrong with these animals? They are getting sick?
They're just so slow that they don't react in the same time scale that humans would react or other mammals would react. So what you're looking for are some of the very basic signs of a stressed animal, closing themselves off, being afraid, not being approachable. In a cold temperature, they'd be hiding away, trying to regulate as best they can. The way that they regulate their body temperature is much like a reptile. They'll actually climb to the top of a tree and just sun themselves. But if you're in a warehouse where it's all dark, there's no sun to be had. So they're going to have a hard time doing that. Physiologically, which is the way I would think, you'd probably want to get some blood work kind of early on and see if you could identify some of the hormones that are involved in stress, primarily cortisol, see if that's changing. And what we know of sloth is transport stress is a huge stressor for them. They can often take months to recover. The other thing I'd also look for is digestion. Are they eating? Are they able to digest food? Are they defecating regularly? Are they doing the things that a normal sloth would do? So it's not as simple as an animal that's stressed out, that's pacing back and forth in its cage. Sloths aren't doing that.
So one explanation that has been reported is that the sloths may have had a viral infection that was hard to detect even after a necropsy. Is that plausible?
It's definitely plausible, considering where they come from, that there could be some sort of pathogen. Sloth, like every other mammal, does get disease. On a necropsy, it really depends, because viruses can often go into sort of latent stages where they're kind of undetectable. They might be circulating in the blood, and you only ever see them when they start having their big effects. So it is possible that they're in some stage of the life cycle of the virus where they're not able to see some of the things like tissue damage, things like that. But again, a good vet monitoring the health of the animals, getting regular blood work, being present and looking at their behavior might have been able to tell something was up. It's all the more reason to not house them in these sort of social conditions where you do run the risk of a virus jumping from one sloth to the other, because they don't normally live their lives that way. They're very solitary. So having them all cramped together in a warehouse under stress, stress is well known to shut down the immune system. You're just leaving yourself open to what could be a disease.
The question on my mind right now is, could this have been prevented?
I think definitely. The very first thing is the fact that, do we need a sloth world on iDrive? iDrive is a place that is associated with tourism. It's a place where you have various attractions. So opening up a sloth world right off the bat, do we need a large indoor rainforest enclosure with sloths on iDrive? So right off the bat, I would say that's preventable. And I know a lot of places will often say, oh, we're doing this for conservation education, but there are better, more concrete ways of doing this. They could open up a center for rehabilitation in Guyana, where these animals came from, or Peru. maybe the it could have been prevented by just not allowing this place to open in the first place. I definitely think that bringing sloths and importing them from the wild, legally sourced or otherwise, has its own history of being very problematic. Sloths don't do well during transport. And my understanding is they had both two-toed sloths, which are usually the ones you see in zoos. They're a little bit bigger. They're a little more tolerable of captivity. They've even been known to breed in captivity in zoos and other places where they take great care. But three-toed sloths, which are smaller and they belong in a different family, have always been problematic in captivity. And then the third, I would say, is an administrative one. I mean, who was in charge? Who was paying attention? Who was actually there? The agencies that were involved, both in the importation and the monitoring, could have done a lot more to shut it down a lot earlier. So it was entirely preventable, I think. Simply put, they weren't ready for housing a bunch of animals. Tragedies like this do tend to make people think about what they're doing and how they're interacting with animals. So hopefully next time you visit a place where you do have some concerns, you raise those concerns and you discuss those concerns and try and find out more and report if necessary.
Animal physiologist Bobby Fokitas is a biology professor at Rollins College. For days, several people here at Central Florida Public Media reached out to Sloth World owner Ben Agresta and Peter Bandry, who was the vice president. We never got a response to our emails, texts, or phone calls.